This is your host, Ronnie Fernandez, LCSW, licensed clinical therapist and owner of Ronnie Fernandez Therapy, but for guys. If you want to know more about me and my private practice, go to ronniefernandez.com. Hello and welcome to Mindset, the guy podcast, where men talk about their life challenges and how they were able to overcome them. My goal with this podcast is to help men better express their thoughts and develop a mindset to better deal with their life challenges. This podcast is not clinical therapy. The men that I interview are not my clients, but have great stories on how they were able to develop a mindset to conquer their challenges. I'm not a professional interviewer or host, so please forgive me for all the pauses, and misplaced words. With that being said, let me introduce you to my next guest. All right, Daniel, thank you for joining me. I met Daniel at we're both at USC at the same time.
MSWs.
MSWs, yep. That's right, man. Fight on. you always have to put the fight on in there, yeah. Man. Daniel, before we start, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, your full name, your experience, education, all that good stuff.
My name is Daniel Lyman, and I am a psychotherapist, just like Ronnie. I went to school back east. I did an arts degree back east at Emerson College, and then I came out to LA after that, and I worked in entertainment for a few years and did a variety of different things before I went to USC to get a master's in social work and a master's in public administration. And then since then, I've been working in private practice.
So what is your private practice like right now?
Yeah, so I work for a company that is called the Pain Psychology Center. We started this right after I graduated, and I also have my private practice. Both are focused around working with people in chronic pain. And the things associated with chronic pain, which could be depression, anxiety, OCD, those kind of things. So, but our focus is helping people overcome chronic pain. That's the ultimate goal. So, yeah.
Thanks, man. I invite Daniel because I really wanted to get your perspective about the LGBT community and kind of the experience and kind of the coming out process, and to kind of it's kind of think that there's some sort of like, oh, it's jealousy, or there's something that's going on. You hear me? And if we don't know somebody that's from that community,
yeah,
sometimes we kind of like create this like fake person.
It's easy to make anybody you don't know out to be a monster, or to like be scary, or to be weird, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, totally. Yeah. Especially there's a lot of stuff on YouTube and stuff. So I just thought it would be important to like get to know somebody or like really kind of connect with somebody that's from the community and be able to go ahead and talk about it. And so I just want to ask you, how did you where'd you grow up in, how was your
my coming out process and everything?
Well, let's start off with the
childhood first.
Just the childhood first.
Okay. I was born in Seattle and to two very middle class parents, a nurse and an engineer, kind of like good middle class jobs. And we lived in Seattle for a while, and then I moved to Portland when I was five with my, I'm the youngest of three, so my older brother and older sister. We lived in Portland. I went to grade school there and high school in Portland, so that's kind of where I consider, that's where my roots are. So.
Okay. And when did you start knowing that you were a little different than everybody else?
Pretty early on, I always kind of felt like I was a weirdo, and not just because I'm gay, probably for a lot of reasons, maybe my sense of humor, I don't know. I always kind of felt like a weirdo, as little kids, like, we don't have language to describe what we're feeling necessarily. It's just like, I feel differently. And I think when I was probably five or six is when I started recognizing, like, oh, I am different than the way these other, like, especially the other boys are in terms of the way they feel towards like girls or whatever. Cause I was that kid in school that I hung out with everybody. Like I remember like I had sleepover, I had girls that would come over and sleep over. I had guys like, I was just friends with everybody. It was never like about, I never at that young age, I didn't even think about like differences in like the genders or whatever. I was just like, oh, if you're funny and you're fun, then we'll be friends.
Yeah.
And I remember like that was unique for a lot of the boys. Cause a lot of them were like, I don't hang out with girls. And I'd be like, I don't care if they're funny. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was always like what was important to me. Somebody who wanted to like go play in the woods and make jokes. So, when I was like five, you know?
Yeah.
So, so I remember feeling very, from a very early age, feeling different in that respect. I say weirdo, but I mean that lovingly. I know some people think of weirdo in a bad way, but I think that's in a good way.
Yeah.
I definitely, by the time I was like 7 or 8 is when I started recognizing that like there was a, my like sexual orientation was different than the other boys. I can remember feeling that because that's when like a lot of them would start talking about girls in a different way, or maybe it was about 9 or so. But, and I remember not really, like, not really fully understanding or relating to what they were saying, and I didn't have the words to really to explain it at that point. But I do remember, and I don't know how old it was, but I do remember my mom bringing home some of her friends who happened to be gay, and I do remember them, I remember, and it was, must have been a subconscious thing, because I don't think I was like smart enough or self-aware enough to really know. But I think I do remember relating to them, being like, oh, you kind of feel like something that I understand. And my mom was the hospice manager at an inpatient hospice center. She was the manager there. And it was mostly, you know, this was the late early 90s, really early to mid 90s. So it was a lot of AIDS patients. There was a lot of cancer, but also a lot of AIDS patients. And so the AIDS patients, of course, at that point were mostly gay. And so I would visit her at work, and she was surrounded by, you know, there were gay patients there, so that meant that there were lots of gay people visiting their friends. And my mother is the most welcoming and accepting person in the world, so she was always just like, oh, whoever, you know, just meet these people. And I was that little kid who happened to be hanging out on the hospice center, which at the time I didn't think was weird, but now it's kind of odd. But yeah, and I remember seeing people like that and thinking, and feeling as though there was something to relate, there was something about them that I wanted to relate to, or I could easily relate to, I should say. So that was a long-winded answer to your question.
Yeah, but. No, and that's the point of the podcast. Is to have a long-winded kind of conversation and not feel
get into it.
Oh yeah, just give me an answer and that's it.
Yeah.
And you know, these, you know, most of the podcasts are for people that, you know, probably can't sleep or can't, you know, that are up, even driving home.
So, yeah, good. That's my long answer, and I'll get more.
keep on with the long answers. And I mean, so yeah,
I can expand on that a little bit more. You know, it was really when I was like 7th and 8th grade that I remember feeling I had the language to say internally that, oh, I am like sexually attracted to guys. There was a point though there where that was, I could say that internally, but of course I couldn't say that externally, and I would keep that way, way, way down.
Yeah.
And like freshman year of high school, I had a girlfriend, and I was trying to understand that side of myself, trying to like, honestly, that was me trying to say like, does this work for me? So I tried it out, and I learned it didn't work for me. But I wanted to try that out because I thought, if it does, good, then I can ignore the other side of myself. Because that other side is so scary and will make me, you know, a pariah. Or make me, you know, ostracized by my peers. So I thought, if I can just hide that part of myself and really accept this potentially straight part of myself, which is something that, like, so many gay people are familiar with, the idea of trying to embrace this, like, expected straightness, even though that's not how you're feeling. It's just like, no, this is, I'll try really hard. I'm gonna do everything I can to be straight. And I would like, I would try so hard to be straight, like everything, to the point where I would, you know, walk differently and think and speak differently, because I was like, if I say anything weird, somebody might think that I'm gay or something like that. So I remember working very, very hard to avoid appearing or seeming gay at all.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't work too hard though, because I did a lot of theater. So,
was that a good outlet for you? You think that kind of helped out?
For sure, theater was a very safe place for me. It was because it's not. I'm very comfortable in myself now that I'm very comfortable in masculine, like hyper masculine spaces now. But at that point, I wasn't, and like really, really masculine spaces where, like, I mean, I tried playing football, but I was terrible at it, so it didn't last very long. I'm also like way too skinny and tall because I'm running back, but like, I mean, beyond that, I was terrible at it. I just wasn't very comfortable in like really masculine spaces. And the thing about theater is it tends to be a space where you can kind of like exist on a variety of like masculine or feminine on that spectrum. It's not like playing sports. It's generally like, be masculine about it.
You have to be
all sports. I played soccer too, but even, and that is like, I would say, quote unquote, less masculine than like football is. But even there, you still have to like be a certain amount of, I can't think of a better word right now, but be a certain amount of masculine to do that. And those spaces, like, I could fit in there if I had to, but they never felt relaxing to me.
Yeah.
It always felt like, and I have really good friends that have said that, like straight guy friends that are like, God, I played football too, but even that like hyper masculine culture was exhausting. They were like,
yeah,
it was like, I felt like I had to like act more masculine or like put on a show a little bit. So
absolutely. I think I felt the same way where it was like, and I played football a little bit in college. Not very good.
But, come on.
But yeah, I don't know. I always felt a little uncomfortable with like super.
Yeah. Like, that like hyper bro culture. That,
my personality is just kind of chill.
And yeah, so mine just, too. Like, everybody calm down.
Yeah. I'd rather just be quiet and then just hit somebody really hard.
Yeah. And then play.
And then that was me.
And you know what? Yeah. I am so much more comfortable. I was always so much more comfortable with that than I was with the masculine posturing.
Yeah.
I would do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That always felt so.
Yeah. No, I definitely understand.
Comfortable to me. Yeah. Which is funny because now I'm so much more athletic than I was back then just because I'm much more comfortable in myself now. So like I'm much more comfortable in spaces that are athletic. But I guess as adults also, we tend not to be quite as – those athletic spaces that I'm comfortable in aren't as masculine. There's not like a bunch of like high school bros.
Yeah. I think we're kind of comfortable where we're at now.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God.
I'm married to you. I don't need to prove you.
Exactly. Like,
fine.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's definitely less less stressful and so just whatever. But
totally.
But yeah. Totally. And so with that, so growing up, you know, being able to have drama and stuff.
Yeah.
How about was religion ever a factor or?
Yeah, it's a good question. So and I'm surprised I didn't mention that talking about my childhood because my parents met doing a what's called the JVC, which is the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, which is what the Peace Corps was based off of. And it's the Jesuits, which are an order of Catholic priests. My parents met doing that. So they met in a Catholic environment. Wow. And so I went to Catholic school from kindergarten through senior year of high school, which was a Jesuit school. The Jesuit was my high school. And Jesuits, I don't know if you know anything about them, but they tend to be a bit more liberal. They're not super conservative. So it wasn't okay to be gay then, but it also wasn't... They weren't like preaching anti-gay stuff at all.
Yeah.
It was just like that was something we just didn't talk about. So religion growing up was there. In my grade school, there was definitely some anti-gay stuff, but my parents were also the kind of people that they never said anything bad. They also rarely said anything bad about anyone. Like that's just who my parents are. They're just loving, welcoming people. But so religion played into it in that religion was around me and it definitely kept that part of me down, but it didn't. It wasn't like I was being yelled at by priests every day for being gay or something like that, which some people have had that experience for sure. I know a lot of people that have. I mean, it's been 20 years since I was in high school, and my high school now is very open and welcoming. I tried to start my senior year of high school, I tried to start a like a LGBT group in school, but they wouldn't let me because Catholic, but it's different now. They have one now. So
they have one now?
Yeah, 20 years later. Wow. Yeah, it's pretty liberal school. So
yeah.
And Portland's a pretty liberal place, too. Mm-hmm. Portland's not very conservative. So, but yeah, so religion played into it. I don't have one of those horror stories where it's like, I was, as I said, like I wasn't like yelled at by priests or taught that I was horrible, horrible person. What we were taught in grade school was that it's okay to be gay, you're just not allowed to act on it, whatever that means.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but that's what we were taught, which I remember thinking was bullshit even then.
Excuse
my language. I was like, this is stupid, but I know, it doesn't even really make any sense, but I feel very lucky that for the most part, religion affected me in other ways, positively and negatively, but as far as like my homosexuality, it was not something that was like overtly pushing me down.
Yeah,
I think it was more subconscious, but
okay.
It's a good question though, because for a lot of people in the LGBT community, religion is very detrimental.
Yeah,
it has historically been very painful and very detrimental, and
causes
a lot of harm.
Yeah, no, and I that was probably one of the big things. Kind of, though, I mean, that was I think the only answer I heard growing up was, "Oh, because God said it was wrong."
God said it was wrong.
Oh, yep. Oh, okay, I mean, because I was like, okay, so it was never really, I don't know, it wasn't really a thing.
which
we even looked into.
If you imagine spending your whole life hearing that God thinks you're bad and that you're wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that screws people up.
Yeah. That really screws people up.
Yeah,
and that's misses that relationship with God and all that stuff.
So. Oh, totally. Yeah. I'll be honest, I'm friends with plenty of LGBT people, and I know some that are religious, but not a lot.
Not a lot.
Because most have been so turned off by the church, myself included. To be honest, the church has not been, it didn't, nobody ever like punched me in the face and said, get out of here. But no one ever said like, you're welcome here. Mm. So I consider myself an atheist, to be honest. Mm. I don't find the church in general to be something that I feel a need for.
Yeah.
In my life. I have my community. I have lots of people that I love, and that's what really, that's what feeds me. So. And my life would be very different, of course, if I wasn't gay and I grew up in the church. Maybe I would still be part of the church. Maybe I would still care. Maybe I'd still care about that community. But never really. It didn't stick for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
So, and that's true for so many LGBT people.
Yeah. No. That's why I asked.
Yeah, right? It's a good question.
That's the only thing that I heard growing up.
Yeah. Did you grow up Catholic or just Christian?
I kind of really didn't grow up anything.
Yeah.
And then now I'm. I mean, because I was never part of like kind of any community as far as religion goes or anything like that. So, and I grew up in East LA and I didn't speak Spanish. Yeah. So.
You were a pariah in your own way.
So I guess it was for me, it was just kind of sports and baseball and football.
That was your community.
That was my community. So, so tell me a little bit more. So, let's kind of bring everything together. So, with the coming out process.
What hell?
What did that look like for you? Because I mean, one thing that I take away from grad school was that is the biggest.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
That is the biggest thing.
I mean,
we're talking for everybody.
Totally.
Like,
it's huge.
The suicide rate. The mental health thing. Like, it's just
LGBT people are something like 3 times more likely to commit suicide, or I think it's actually. Don't quote me on that stat. It's higher than that, actually.
Yeah.
Because of being ostracized and being treated differently and being treated like less than, of course. I say coming out is a nightmare. You know, for so many kids now, it's not a big deal, especially in places like LA or, oops.
Yeah.
Especially places like LA or, I just hit the mic here.
Sorry.
That's fine. Or more liberal places. Like, I know lots of kids that have come out and their parents are like, great, cool. And it's not a big deal. Like, it's just not a big deal, which is great. For a lot of people, it's just a nightmare, though. Telling people who you are is so scary, especially when you think that there's the risk that they will just reject you. I mean, I know so many people in college, where I went to college at Emerson, it's a very liberal school, so there were a lot of LGBT people there, and a lot of them couldn't go home because their families were like, oh, you're gay, you're out of the family. You know, just never talk to them again. You just disown them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's common. It's people have, coming out can be so traumatic for people. It can be just incredibly triggering because of all these cultural and familial messages we get that being gay is wrong. So then you have to finally tell somebody, "Hey, I'm wrong." Like that feels terrible. So for me personally, I can tell my personal story. I was very lucky. So I say it was a nightmare. It was very hard for me, but I was very lucky that my family is so loving and accepting, and people around me were, for the most part, 99% were just like, okay, cool. What are we doing for lunch? You know, like, they didn't care. It was just like, whatever. Yeah. It's the same old thing. Probably because they kind of guessed beforehand. But I came out to some friends, and I came out to a couple people over email first. That was how I did it. Because that which I know sounds ridiculous. But I was like 16. And it felt so safe to do it that way, to like send them an email, because like looking at somebody face to face and saying I'm gay was like my nightmare. I did not want to say that. So I honestly don't even remember, it's been so long, but I think the first thing I did was write an email to my friend Lindsay and say, hey, you should know that I'm attracted to guys. And that, I didn't even say gay, because that word was like, avoid that word, don't want to say that. And she responded and was like, cool, whatever. And then I came out to another friend, my friend Mara, and she actually was like, this is awesome. I've always wanted a gay best friend. I was like, all right, okay, cool. And then in college, when I got to college, I was just out. I had made that decision myself that I would start undergrad just like being myself. So I wouldn't have to reintroduce myself.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, people should know this about me.
Yeah.
But I wasn't out to my parents or my family. So I came home after my first semester. I think it was after my first, maybe it was at the end of the year. I can't quite remember. End of my freshman year. Came home to Portland, and my mom, I used to meet her for lunch all the time. She worked in downtown Portland, and our house is just a little bit outside of downtown, so I would go into downtown to have lunch with her on our lunch break. I went into downtown, met her, and she was like, oh, I don't have a lot of time today. Do you mind if we just go to a... Oh, crap, what is it? It's a Mexican restaurant. It's not a Chipotle. It's before that. Baja Fresh. And we went to Baja Fresh, and we ordered, and we got that little, like, the number before they bring your food out.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I have to say this, otherwise I'm going to explode. Like, I can't fake a conversation when I knew I needed to tell her. So I just said, hey, we sat down, we put, like, the number on the table before we even got our food, and I just turned to my mom, and I said, Mom, you should know that I'm gay. And then she, like, paused for a little while, and then she looked at me, and she goes, well, we should be in a nicer restaurant. So then we got up and moved to a nicer restaurant. Because so, she wanted to celebrate, which was, like, the sweetest response ever. Wow. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was very sweet. It was very kind of her. So,
wow, yeah.
She'd also, as I said, she had, you know, been, she's friends with all kinds of people and had worked, you know, as the manager of a hospice place for a lot of AIDS patients. So she'd been around a lot of gay people.
Yeah.
So she was very comfortable in that. She was also, when I was meeting her at work, where she was working was a mental health clinic for homeless people suffering with a lot of, like, bipolar and schizophrenia.
Yeah.
So she's, like, very comfortable in a lot of environments. Yeah. So me saying I'm gay was like, phew, at least you're not, like, you know, addicted to heroin and feeling schizophrenic. So I was very lucky in that respect about my family being so welcoming. I didn't want to tell my dad, not because I was afraid of telling my dad, because I knew he would kind of respond the same way as my mom, but it was just so much work to tell my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I was exhausted afterwards. Yeah. I was like, wow. I just don't want to have to go through this again. So a couple days later, she was like, are you going to tell your dad? And I was like, I will, but I'm so tired. I just don't want to do this. And she was like, okay, can I do it? Can I tell him? And I said, please, that way I don't have to actually say anything. So she, I don't know what she said, but he came home after work, after she had told him, and he was like, he calls me Dano. He was like, hey, Dano, can I talk to you? He's like, sure, Dad. So we, like, went into our TV room. And he sat down, and he was like, so your mother shared some news with me? I was like, my heart's, like, pounding out of my chest. And I was like, okay. And he's like, and whoever you want to be, that's just fine with me. And then we kind of paused, and I turned to my dad, and I was like, well, to be honest, this isn't who I want to be. This is just who I am. And he was like, oh, okay, well, whoever you are, that's fine with me. So I was kind of like teaching him the language, because it's not like I ever wanted to be gay.
Yeah.
I just am. So,
yeah.
But then from there, I was very lucky. Everybody was so welcoming and encouraging. So, and which is rare. This was 20 years ago. So that was rare 20 years ago. So I feel very lucky.
So what are some takeaways for somebody that wants to be supportive? Let's just say it's a parent.
Yeah.
Like, what are some things that really, that you really look back on and really appreciate how they handled that?
You know, I was lucky that my parents had people of all backgrounds and sizes and colors and whatever around them. And that, to me, kind of, that was unconscious signaling that, oh, we love all these people. You know, if my parents only hung out, I'm white. And if my parents only hung out with other white people, or only hung out with other white straight people or whatever, then I would think, oh, those other people are, that's scary. Or, you know, it'd be the unknown.
Yeah.
But fortunately, my parents hung out with a lot of different kinds of people, so I felt safer in that environment. Yeah. Now, Portland's pretty white, unfortunately, so they weren't, like, hanging out with every spectrum of the rainbow in terms of skin color, but they did the best they could. And so I think, you know, to be supportive, if from, like, a parent's perspective, to be supportive is to, you know, expose your kids to other people and show them that you love, you know, you love people of all kinds and different experiences. And you know, my dad is into college basketball, so we watched a lot of college basketball. He's not huge on football, but we watch football sometimes. But he was also the kind of guy that was like, let's go see a play, or let's go see, you know, like, there was a spectrum of, let's just try things. Like, don't be, he's not limited on, like, this is the only thing I'm into and I don't want to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, whatever you're into, and we can try new stuff together. And that was an unconscious way of signaling that they're accepting, you know, from a very early age.
Yeah.
Now, my parents had said things to me. They had actually made, like, not such explicit comments, but they'd say things like, if you're gay, that's okay with us. Mm. Which I remember feeling kind of uncomfortable with, to be honest, at that point, because I was like, I'm not gay. Don't push that on me.
Also, before you came out, they would say that?
They wouldn't say that explicitly, but they would say, and it wouldn't be to me. It would be like, they would say things like, good for that person, or, you know what I mean? Like,